he said, is a lorry. This is not like your Ford and your Dodge, you know. Baku began working on it that very afternoon, and Mrs. Baku went around telling people, why not come and see how he working on the Bedford? From time to time, Baku would crawl out from under the lorry and polish the wings and the bonnet. Then he would crawl under the lorry again. But he didn't look happy. The next day, the people who had lent the money to buy the Bedford formed a deputation and came to Baku's house, begging him to desist. Baku remained under the lorry all the time, refusing to reply. The moneylenders grew angry, and some of the women among them began to cry. Even that failed to move Baku. And in the end, the deputation just had to go away. When the deputation left, Baku began to take it out of his wife. He beat her, and he said, is you who want me to buy lorry? Is you? Is you? All you thinking about is money, money, just like your mother. But the real reason for his temper was that he couldn't put back the engine as he had found it. Two or three pieces remained outside, and they puzzled him. The agents sent a mechanic. He looked at the lorry and asked Baku, very calmly, why you buy a Bedford? Baku said, I like the Bedford. The mechanic shouted, why the ass you didn't buy a Rolls Royce? They do sell those with the engine sealed down. Then he went to work, saying sadly, is enough to make you want to cry. A nice new lorry like this. The starter never worked again, and Baku always had to use the crank. Hat said, is a blasted shame. Lorry looking new, smelling new, everything still shining, all sort of chalk marks still on the chassis, and this man cranking it up like some old Ford pram. But Mrs. Baku boasted, first crank, the engine to start. One morning, it was a Saturday, market day. Mrs. Baku came crying to my mother. She said, he in hospital. My mother said, accident? Mrs. Baku said, he was cranking up the lorry just outside the market. First crank, the engine start. But it was in gear, and it rolled he up against another lorry. Baku spent a week in hospital. All the time he had the lorry, he hated his wife, and he beat her regularly with the cricket bat. But she was beating him, too, with her tongue. And I think Baku was rarely the loser in these quarrels. It was hard to back the lorry into the yard, and it was Mrs. Baku's duty and joy to direct her husband. One day she said, all right, man, back, back, turn a little to the right. All right, all clear. Oh, God, no, 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 man, stop. You can knock the fence down. Baku suddenly went mad. He reversed so fiercely he cracked the concrete fence. Then he shot forward again, ignoring Mrs. Baku's screams, and reversed again, knocking down the fence altogether. He was in a great temper, and while his wife remained outside crying, he went to his little room, stripped to his pants, flung himself belly down on the bed, and began reading the Ramayana. The lorry wasn't making money. But to make any at all, Baku had to have loaders. He got two of those big, black, Grenadian small islanders who were just beginning to pour into Port of Spain. They called Baku boss and Mrs. Baku madam, and this was nice. But when I looked at these men sprawling happily in the back of the lorry in their ragged, dusty clothes and their squashed-up felt hats, I used to wonder whether they knew how much worry they caused and how uncertain their own position was. Mrs. Baku's talk was now all about these two men. She would tell my mother mournfully, day after tomorrow we have to pay the loaders. 2 days later she would say, as though the world had come to an end, today we pay the loaders. And in no time at all, she would be coming around to my mother in distress again, saying, day after tomorrow, we have to pay the loaders. Paying the loaders. For months I seemed to hear about nothing else. The words were well known in the street and became an idiom. Boy would say to Errol on a Saturday, "Come, let me go to the 1:30 show at Roxy." And Errol would turn out his pockets and say, "I can't go, man. I pay the loaders." Hat said, "It look as though Baku buy the lorry just to pay the loaders." The lorry went in the end, and the loaders too. I don't know what happened to them. Mrs. Baku had the lorry sold just at a time when lorries began making money. They bought a taxi. But now the competition was fierce, and taxis were running 8 miles for 12 cents, just enough to pay for oil and petrol. Mrs. Baku told my mother, "The taxi ain't making money." So she bought another taxi and hired a man to drive it. She said, "Two better than one." Baku was reading the Ramayana more and more. And even that began to annoy the people in the street. Hat said, "Hear the two of them now? She with that voice she got, and he's singing that damn sing-song Hindu song." Picture then the following scene. Mrs. Baku, very short, very fat, standing at the pipe in her yard and shrilling at her husband. He is in his pants, lying on his belly, dolefully intoning the Ramayana. Suddenly, he springs up and snatches the cricket bat in the corner of the room. He runs outside and begins to beat Mrs. Baku with the bat. The silence that follows lasts a few minutes, and then only Baku's voice is heard as he does a solo from the Ramayana. But don't think that Mrs. Baku lost any pride in her husband. Whenever you listened to the rows between Mrs. Baku and Mrs. Morgan, you realized that Baku was still his wife's lord and master. Mrs. Morgan would say, "I hear your husband talking in his sleep last night, loud, loud." "He wasn't talking," Mrs. Baku said. "He was singing." "Singing? Ha 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 ha! You know something, Mrs. Baku?" "What, Mrs. Morgan?" "If your husband sing for his supper, both of all you starve like hell." "He know a damn lot more than any of the ignorant man it have in this street, you hear? He could read and write, you know, English and Hindi. How you so ignorant you don't know that the Ramayana is a holy book? If you could understand all the good thing he's singing, you wouldn't be talking all this nonsense you're talking now, you hear? How your husband this morning, anyway? He fix any new cars lately? I not going to dirty my mouth arguing with you hear? He know how to fix his car. Is a wonder nobody ain't tell your husband where he can fix all his so-called fireworks." Mrs. Baku used to boast that Baku read the Ramayana 2 or 3 times a month. "It have some parts he know by heart," she said. But that was little consolation, for money wasn't coming in. The man she had hired to drive the second taxi was playing the fool. She said, "He robbing me like hell. He say that the taxi making so little money I owe him now." She sacked the driver and sold the car. She used all her financial flair. She began rearing hens. That failed because a lot of the hens were stolen, the rest attacked by street dogs, and Baku hated the smell anyway. She began selling bananas and oranges, but she did that more for her own enjoyment than for the little money it brought in. My mother said, "Why Baku don't go out and get a work?" Mrs. Baku said,
"But how you want that?"
My mother said, "I don't want it. I was thinking about you." Mrs. Baku said, "You could see he working with all the rude and crude people it have here in Port of Spain." My mother said,
"Well, he have to do something.
People don't pay to see a man crawling under a motor car or singing Ramayana." Mrs. Baku nodded and looked sad. My mother said, "But what I saying at all? you sure Baku know the Ramayana?
I sure, sure.
My mother said, well, it easy, easy. He is a Brahmin. He know the Ramayana and he have a car. Is easy for him to become a pundit, a real proper pundit. Mrs. Baku clapped her hands.
Is a first-class idea. Hindu pundits making a lot of money these days.
So, Baku became a pundit. He still tinkered with his car. He had to stop beating Mrs. Baku with the cricket bat. But he was happy. I was haunted by thoughts of the dhoti-clad Pandit Baku, crawling under a car, attending to a crankshaft, while poor Hindus waited for him to attend to their souls. 14. Caution. It was not until 1947 that Bolo believed that the war was over. Up till then, he used to say, is only a lot of propaganda, just lies for black people. In 1947, the Americans began pulling down their camp in George V Park, and many people were getting sad. I went to see Bolo one Sunday, and while he was cutting my hair, he said, I hear the war over. I said, so I hear too, but I still have my doubts. Bolo said, I know what you mean. These people is master of propaganda. But the way I look at it is this. If they were still fighting, they would have wanted to keep the camp. But they're not keeping the camp, I said. Bolo said, exactly. Put two and two together and what you get. Tell me, what you get? I said, four. He clipped my hair thoughtfully for a few moments. He said, well, I glad the war over. When I paid for my trim, I said, what do you think we should do now, Mr. Bolo? You think we should celebrate? He said, give me time, man. Give me time. This is a big thing. I have to think it over. And there the matter rested. I remember the night when the news of peace reached Port of Spain. People just went wild, and there was a carnival in the streets. A new calypso sprang out of nothing, and everybody was dancing in the streets to the tune of All Day and All Night, Miss Marianne. Down by the riverside, she taking man. Bolo looked at the dancers and said, stupidness, stupidness. How black people so stupid? I said, but you ain't here, Mr. Bolo. The war over. He spat. How you know? You was fighting it?
But it come over on the radio, and I read it in the papers.
Bolo laughed. He said,
anybody would think you was still a little boy.
You mean you come so big, and you still does believe anything you read in the papers? I had heard this often before. Bolo was 60, and the only truth he had discovered seemed to be, you mustn't believe anything you read in the papers. It was his whole philosophy, and it didn't make him happy. He was the saddest man in the street. I think Bolo was born sad. Certainly I never saw him laugh, except in a sarcastic way, and I saw him at least once a week for 11 years. He was a tall man, not thin, with a face that was a caricature of sadness, the mouth curling downwards, the eyebrows curving downwards, the eyes big and empty of expression. It was an amazement to me that Bolo made a living at all after he had stopped barbering. I suppose he would be described in a census as a carrier. His cart was the smallest thing of its kind I knew. It was a little box on two wheels, and he pushed it himself, pushed with his long body, in such an attitude of resignation and futility, you wondered why he pushed it at all. On this cart, he could take just about two or three sacks of flour or sugar. On Sundays, Bolo became a barber again, and if he was proud of anything, he was proud of his barbering. Often, Bolo said to me, "You know Samuel?" Samuel was the most successful barber in the district. He was so rich he took a week's holiday every year, and he liked everybody to know it. I said, "Yes, I know Samuel, but I don't like him to touch my hair at all, at all. He can't cut hair. He does zog up my head." Bolo said, "You know who teach Samuel all he know about cutting hair, you know?" I shook my head. I teach Samuel. He couldn't even shave himself when he start barbering. He come crying and begging. Mr. Bolo, teach me how to cut people hair, I beg you. Well, I teach him. And look what happened, eh? Samuel rich, and I still living in one room in this breakdown old house. Samuel have a room where he does cut hair. I have to cut hair in the open under this mango tree. I said, "But it's nice outside. It's better than sitting down in a hot room." "But why you stop cutting hair regular, Mr. Bolo?" "Ha, boy, that is asking a big, big question. The fact is, I just can't trust myself." "It's not true. You just cut hair good, better than Samuel." "It ain't that I mean. Boy, when it have a man sitting down in front of you in a chair, and you don't like this man, and you have a razor in your hand, a lot of funny things could happen. I does only cut people hair these days when I like them. I can't cut any and everybody hair." Although in 1945, Bolo didn't believe that the war was over, in 1939, he was one of the great alarmists. In those days, he bought all three Port of Spain newspapers, the Trinidad Guardian, the Port of Spain Gazette, and the Evening News. When the war broke out and the Evening News began issuing special bulletins, Bolo bought those too. Those were the days when Bolo said, "It have a lot of people who think they could kick people around. They think because we poor, we don't know anything. But I ain't in that, you hear? Every day I sit down and read my papers regular." More particularly, Bolo was interested in the Trinidad Guardian. At one stage, Bolo bought about 20 copies of that paper every day. The Guardian was running a missing ball competition. They printed a photograph of a football match in progress, but they had rubbed the ball out. All you had to do to win a lot of money was to mark the position of the ball with an X. Spotting the missing ball became one of Bolo's passions. In the early stages, Bolo was happy enough to send in one X a week to the Guardian. It was a weekly excitement for all of us. Hack used to say, "Bolo, I bet you forget all of us when you win the money. You leaving Miguel Street Man and buying a big house in St. Clair, eh?" Bolo said, "No, I don't want to stay in Trinidad. I think I could go to the States." Bolo began marking two X's, then three, four, six. He never won a penny. He was getting almost constantly angry. He would say, "It's just a big bacchanal, you hear? The paper people done make up their mind long, long time now who going to win the week prize. They only want to get all the black people money." Hat said, "You mustn't get discouraged. You got to try really hard again." Bolo bought sheets of squared paper and fitted them over the missing ball photograph. Wherever the lines crossed, he marked an X. To do this properly, Bolo had to buy something like 100 to 150 Guardians every week. Sometimes Bolo would call Boye and Errol and me and say, "Now, boys, where you think this missing ball is? Look, I want you to shut your eyes and mark a spot with this pencil." And sometimes again, Bolo would ask us, "What sort of things you been dreaming this week?" If you said you didn't dream at all, Bolo looked disappointed. I used to make up dreams, and Bolo would work them out in relation to the missing ball. People began calling Bolo Missing Ball. Hat used to say, Look, the man with the missing ball. One day, Bolo went up to the offices of the Guardian and beat up a sub-editor before the police could be called. In court, Bolo said, "The ball not missing, you hear? It wasn't there in the first place." Bolo was fined $25. The Gazette ran a story. The case of the missing ball. Penalty for a foul. Altogether, Bolo spent about $300 trying to spot the missing ball, and he didn't even get a consolation prize. It was shortly after the court case that Bolo stopped barbering regularly, and also stopped reading The Guardian. I can't remember now why Bolo stopped reading the evening news, but I know why he stopped reading the Gazette. A great housing shortage arose in Port of Spain during the war, and in 1942, a philanthropist came to the rescue of the unhoused. He said he was starting a cooperative housing scheme. People who wished to take part in this venture had to deposit some $200, and after a year or so, they would get brand new houses for next to nothing. Several important men blessed the new scheme, and lots of dinners were eaten to give the project a good start. The project was heavily advertised, and about 5 or 6 houses were built and handed over to some of the people who had eaten the dinners. The papers carried photographs of people putting keys into locks and stepping over thresholds. Bolo saw the photographs and the advertisements in the Gazette, and he paid in his $200. In 1943, the director of the Cooperative Housing Society disappeared, and with him disappeared 2 or 3,000 dream houses. Bolo stopped reading the Gazette. It was on a Sunday in November that year that Bolo made his announcement to those of us who were sitting under the mango tree, waiting for Bolo to cut our hair. He said, "I saying something now, and so help me God, if I ever break my word, it could be better if I lose my 2 eyes. Listen, I stop reading papers. If even I learn Chinese, I ain't gonna read Chinese papers, you hearing? You mustn't believe anything you read in the papers." Bolo was cutting Hat's hair at the moment, and had hurriedly got up and left. Later Hat said, "You know what I think? We will have to stop getting trim from Bolo. The man get me really frightened now, you hear?" We didn't have to think a lot about Hat's decision, because a few days later Bolo came to us and said, "I'm coming round to see you people one by one, because it's the last time you could see me." He looked so sad, I thought he was going to cry. Hat said, "What are you thinking of doing now?" Bolo said, "I leaving this island for good. There's only a lot of damn crooks here." Eddowes said, "Bolo, you taking your box card with you?" Bolo said, "No, why? You like it?" Eddowes said, "I was thinking, it looked like good materials to me." Bolo said, "Eddowes, take my box card." Hat said, "Where you going, Bolo?" Bolo said, "You go here." And so he left us that evening. Eddowes said, "You think Bolo going mad?" Hat said, "No, he going Venezuela. That is why he keeping so secret. The Venezuelan police don't like Trinidad people going over." Eddowes said, "Bolo is a nice man, and I sorry he leaving. You know, it have some people I know who be glad to have that box card Bolo leave behind." We went to Bolo's little room that very evening, and we cleaned it of all the useful stuff he had left behind. There wasn't much. A bit of oilcloth, 2 or 3 old combs, a cutlass, and a bench. We were all sad. Hat said, "People really treat poor Bolo bad in this country. I don't blame him for leaving." Eddowes was looking over the room in a practical way. He said, "But Bolo take away everything, man." Next afternoon, Eddowes announced, "You know how much I pick up for that box cart? $2. Hat said, "You just work damn fast, you know, Eddowes." Then we saw Bolo himself walking down Miguel Street.
Hat said, Eros, you in trouble.
Edo said, But he give it to me. I didn't thief it.
Bolo looked tired and sadder than ever.
Hat said, What happened, Bolo?
You make a record, man. Don't tell me you go to Venezuela and you come back already.
Bolo said,
Trinidad people, I don't know why Hitler don't come here and bomb all the sons of bitches that have in this island. He bombing the wrong people, you know.
Hat said,
Sit down, Bolo, and tell me what happened.
Bolo said, Not yet. It have something I have to settle first. Edo's, where my box card?
Hat laughed.
Bolo said, You laughing? But I don't see the joke. Where my box card, Edo's? You think you could make box card like that?
Edo said, Your box card, Bolo? But you give it to me.
Bolo said, I asking you to give it back to me.
Edo said, I sell it, Bolo. Look, the $2 I get for it.
Bolo said,
But you quick, man.
Edo's was getting up. Bolo said, Edo's, it have one thing I begging you not to do. I begging you, Edo's, not to come for trim by me again, you hear? I can't trust myself. And go and buy back my box card.
Edo's went away muttering, It's a funny sort of world where people think their little box card's so good. It like my big blue card?
Bolo said, When I get my hand on a good-for-nothing thief who take my money and say he taking me to Venezuela, I can let him know something.
You know what the man do? He drive around all night in a motor launch and then put me down in a swamp, saying we reach Venezuela.
I see some people.
I begin talking to them in Spanish. They shake their head and laugh. You know is what? He put me down in Trinidad self, 3-4 miles from La Brea.
Hat said,
Bolo, you don't know how lucky you is. Some of these people would kill you and throw you overboard, man. They say they don't like getting into trouble with the Venezuelan police.
It's illegal going over to Venezuela, you know. We saw very little of Bolo after this. Edo's managed to get the box card back, and he asked me to take it to Bolo.
Edo said, You see why black people can't get on in this world? You was there when he give it to me with his own 2 hands, and now he want it back. Take it back to him, and tell him Edo say he could go to hell.
I told Bolo, Edo say he's sorry, and he send back the box card.
Bolo said, You see how black people is. They only quick to take. They don't want to give. That is why black people never get on.
I said, Mr. Bolo, it have something I take too, but I bring it back. Is the oil cloth. I did take it and give it to my mother, but she asked me to bring it back.
Bolo said, Is all right. But boy, who trimming you these days? You head look as though fowl sitting on it.
I said, Is Samuel trim me, Mr. Bolo? But I tell you he can't trim. You see how he zog up my head?
Bolo said, Come Sunday, I could trim you.
I hesitated.
Bolo said, You afraid?
Don't be stupid. I like you.
So I went on Sunday.
Bolo said, How are you getting on with your lessons?
I didn't want to boast.
Bolo said, It have something I want you to do for me, but I'm not sure whether I should ask you.
I said, But ask me, Mr. Bolo. I could do anything for you.
He said, No, don't worry. I could tell you next time you come.
A month later, I went again, and Bolo said, You could read.
I reassured him.
He said, Well, is a secret thing I doing. I don't want nobody to know.
You could keep a secret?
I said, Yes, I could keep secret.
A old man like me ain't have much to live for.
Bolo said. A old man like me, living by himself, have to have something to live for. Is why I doing this thing I tell you about.
What is this thing, Mr. Bolo?
He stopped clipping my hair and pulled out a printed sheet from his trouser pocket. He said, You know what this is? I said, Is a sweepstake ticket.
Right, you smart man.
Is really a sweepstake ticket.
I said, But what do you want me to do, Mr. Bolo?
He said, First, you must promise not to tell anybody. I gave my word. He said, I want you to find out if the number draw. The draw was made about 6 weeks later, and I looked for Bolo's number. I told him,
You number ain't draw, Mr. Bolo.
He said, Not even approximately access it? I shook my head. But Bolo didn't look disappointed. Is just what I expect, he said. For nearly 3 years, this was our secret. And all during those years, Bolo bought sweepstake tickets and never won. Nobody knew, and even when Hat or somebody else said to him, Bolo, I know a thing you could try. Why you don't try sweepstake? Bolo would say, I done with that sort of thing, man. At the Christmas meeting of 1948, Bolo's number was drawn. It wasn't much, just about $300. I ran to Bolo's room and said, Mr. Bolo, the number draw. Bolo's reaction wasn't what I expected. He said, Look, boy, you in long pants now, but don't get me mad, or I have to beat you bad. I said, But it really draw, Mr. Bolo. He said, How the hell you know it draw? I said, I see it in the papers. At this, Bolo got really angry, and he seized me by the collar. He screamed, How often I have to tell you, you little good-for-nothing son of a bitch, that you mustn't believe all that you read in the papers. So I checked up with the Trinidad Turf Club. I said to Bolo, Is really true? Bolo refused to believe. He said, These Trinidad people does only lie. Lie is all they know. They could fool you, boy, but they can't fool me. I told the men of the street, Bolo mad like hell. The man win $300 and he don't want to believe. One day, Boy said to Bolo, Aye, Bolo, you win a sweepstake then. Bolo chased Boy shouting, You playing the ass, eh? You making joke with a man old enough to be your grandfather. And when Bolo saw me, he said, Is so you just keep secret? Is so you just keep secret? But why all you Trinidad people so, eh? And he pushed his boxcart down to Eros's house, saying, Eros, you want boxcart, eh? Here, take the boxcart. And he began hacking the cart to bits with his cutlass. To me, he shouted, People think they could fool me. And he took out the sweepstake ticket and tore it. He rushed up to me and forced the pieces into my shirt pocket. Afterwards, he lived to himself in his little room, seldom came out to the street, never spoke to anybody. Once a month, he went to draw his old age pension. 15. Until the soldiers came. Edward, Hat's brother, was a man of many parts, and I always thought it a sad thing that he drifted away from us. He used to help Hat with the cows when I first knew him, and, like Hat, he looked settled and happy enough. He said he had given up women for good, and he concentrated on cricket, football, boxing, horse racing, and cockfighting. In this way, he was never bored, and he had no big ambition to make him unhappy. Like Hat, Edward had a high regard for beauty. But Edward didn't collect birds of beautiful plumage, as Hat did. Edward painted. His favorite subject was a brown hand clasping a black one. And when Edward painted a brown hand, it was a brown hand. No nonsense about light and shades.
and the sea was a blue sea, and mountains were green. Edward mounted his pictures himself and framed them in red passepartout. The big department stores, Salvatore's, Fogarty's, and Johnson's, distributed Edward's work on commission. To the street, however, Edward was something of a menace. He would see Mrs. Morgan wearing a new dress and say,
"Ah, Mrs. Morgan, is a nice, nice dress you wear in there. But I think it could do with some sort of decoration."
Or he would see Edo's wearing a new shirt and say,
"Hey, hey, Edo's, you're wearing a new shirt, man. You write your name in it, you know. Otherwise, somebody pick it up brisk one of these days. Tell you what, I gotta write it for you."
He ruined many garments in this way. He also had the habit of giving away ties he had decorated himself. He would say, "I have something for you. Take it and wear it. I've given it to you because I like you." And if the tie wasn't worn, Edward would get angry and begin shouting,
"But you see how ungrateful black people is. Listen to this. I see this man not wearing tie. I take a bus and I go to town. I walk to Johnson's and I look for the gents department. I meet a girl and I buy a tie. I take a bus back home. I go inside my room and take up my brush and unscrew my paint. I dip my brush in paint and I put the brush on the tie. I spend 2-3 hours doing that. And after all this, the man ain't wearing my tie."
But Edward did a lot more than just paint. One day, not many months after I had come to the street, Edward said,
"Coming back on the bus from Kokoreet last night, I only hearin' the bus wheel cracking over Crabback. You know the place by the coconut trees and the swamp? There it just crawling with crab. People say they even climbing up the coconut trees."
Hat said, "It has come out a lot at full moon. Let me go tonight and catch some of the crabs that Edward see." Edward said, "It's just what I was going to see. We will have to take the boys because it have so much crab even they could pick up a lot." So we boys were invited.
Edward said, "Hat, I was thinking, it could be a lot easier to catch the crab if we take a shovel. It have so much you could just shovel them up."
Hat said, "All right, we could take the cow pen shovel." Edward said, "That's settled. But look, all you have strong shoes? You better get strong shoes, you know, because these crab and them ain't playing big. And if you don't look out, they can start walking away with your big toe before you know what is what."
Hat said, "I could use leggings I just wear when I cleaning out the cow pen."
Edward said, "And we better wear gloves. I know a man was catching crab one day, and suddenly he see his right hand walking away from him. He look again and see 4 or 5 crab carrying it away. This man jump up and begin one bawling. So we have to be careful. If you boys ain't have gloves, just wrap some cloth over your hands. That could be all right." So late that night, we all climbed into the Kokoreet bus, Hat in his leggings, Edward in his, and the rest of us carrying cutlasses and big brown sacks. The shovel Hat carried still stank from the cow pen, and people began squinging up their noses.
Hat said, "Let them smell it. They does all want milk when the cow give it."
People looked at the leggings and the cutlasses and the shovel and the sacks and looked away quickly. They stopped talking. The conductor didn't ask for our fares. The bus was silent until Edward began to talk. Edward said, "We must try and not use the cutlass. It ain't nice to kill. Try and get them live and put them in the bag." Many people got off at the next stop. By the time the bus got to Mukarapo Road, it was carrying only us. The conductor stood right at the front talking to the driver. Just before we got to the Kokoreet terminus, Edward said,
"Oh God, I know I was forgetting something. We can't bring back all the crab in a bus. I have to go and telephone for a van."
He got off one stop before the terminus. We walked a little way in the bright moonlight, left the road and climbed down into the swamp. A tired wind blew from the sea, and the smell of stale seawater was everywhere. Under the coconut trees, it was dark. We walked a bit further in. A cloud covered the moon, and the wind fell. Hat called out, "You boys all right? Be careful with your foot. I don't want any of you going home with only three toes." Boy said, "But I ain't seeing any crab." 10 minutes later, Edward joined us. He said, "How many bags you full?" Hat said, "It looked like a lot of people had the same idea and come and take away all the crab." Edward said, "Rubbish. You don't see the moon ain't showing? We got to wait until the moon come out before the crab come out. Sit down, boys. Let me wait." The moon remained clouded for half an hour. Boy said, "It making cold, and I want to go home. I don't think it have any crab." Errol said, "Don't mind, boy. I know him. He just frightened of the dark, and he afraid the crab bite him." At this point, we heard a rumbling in the distance. Hat said, "It looked like the van come." Edward said, "It ain't a van, really. I order a big truck from Sam." We sat in silence, waiting for the moon to clear. Then about a dozen torchlights flashed all around us. Someone shouted, "We ain't want any trouble, but if any one of you play the fool, you're going to get beat up bad." We saw what looked like a squad of policemen surrounding us. Boye began to cry. Edward said, "It have man beating their wife. It have people breaking into other people's house. Why you policemen don't go and spend your time doing something with sense, eh? Just for a change." A policeman said, "Why you don't shut up? You want me to spit in your mouth?" Another policeman said, "What do you have in those bags?" Edward said, "Only crab, but take care. They is big crab, and they could bite off your hand." Nobody looked inside the bags, and then a man with a lot of stripes said, "Everybody playing bad man these days. Everybody getting full of smart answers, like the Americans and them." A policeman said, "They have bag, they have cutlass, they have shovel, they have glove." Hat said, "We was catching crab." The policeman said, "With shovel? Hey, what happened that you suddenly is God and make a new sort of crab you could catch with shovel?" It took a lot of talk to make the policeman believe our story. The officer in charge said, "I'd like to lay my hands on the son of a bitch who telephoned and say you was going to kill somebody." Then the policeman left. It was late, and we had missed the last bus. Hat said, "We had better wait for the truck Edward order." Edward said, "Something tell me that truck ain't coming now." Hat said, very slowly, half laughing and half serious, "Edward, you was my own brother, but you know, you really is a son of a bitch." Edward sat down and just laughed and laughed. Then the war came. Hitler invaded France, and the Americans invaded Trinidad. Lord Invader made a hit with his calypso. I was living with my decent and contented wife until the soldiers came and broke up my life. For the first time in Trinidad, there was work for everybody, and the Americans paid well. Invader sang, "Father, mother, and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Money in the land, the Yankee dollar, oh." Edward stopped working in the cow pen and got a job with the Americans at Chaguaramas. Hat said, "Edward, I think you foolish to do that. The Americans ain't here forever and ever. It ain't have no sense in going off and working for big money and then not having nothing to eat after 3-4 years. Edward said, "This war look as though it gonna last a long, long time. And the Americans not like the British, you know. They just make you work hard, but they just pay for it." Edward sold his share of the cows to Hat. and that marked the beginning of his drift away from us. Edward surrendered completely to the Americans. He began wearing clothes in the American style. He began chewing gum, and he tried to talk with an American accent. We didn't see much of him except on Sundays, and then he made us feel small and inferior. He grew fussy about his dress, and he began wearing a gold chain around his neck. He began wearing straps around his wrists, after the fashion of tennis players. These straps were just becoming fashionable among smart young men in Port of Spain. Edward didn't give up painting, but he no longer offered to paint things for us, and I think most people were relieved. He entered some poster competition, and when his design didn't win even a consolation prize, he grew really angry with Trinidad. One Sunday, he said, "I was stupid to send in anything I paint with my own two hands for Trinidad people to judge. What they know about anything? Now, if I was in America, it would be different. The Americans is people. They know about things." To hear Edward talk, you felt that America was a gigantic country inhabited by giants. They lived in enormous houses, and they drove in the biggest cars of the world. Edward used to say, "Look at Miguel Street. In America, you think they have streets so narrow? In America, this street could pass for a sidewalk." One night, I walked down with Edward to Dockside, the American army camp. Through the barbed wire, you could see the huge screen of an open-air cinema. Edward said, "You see the sort of theater they come and build in a stupid little place like Trinidad? Imagine the sort of thing they have in the States." And we walked down a little further until we came to a sentry in his box. Edward used his best American accent and said, "What's cooking, Joe?" To my surprise, the sentry, looking fierce under his helmet, replied. And in no time at all, Edward and the sentry were talking away, each trying to use more swear words than the other. When Edward came back to Miguel Street, he began swaggering along, and he said to me, "Tell them. Tell them how good I just get on with the Americans." And when he was with Hat, he said, "Was talking the other night with an American. Damn good friend. And he was telling me that as soon as the Americans entered the war gonna end." Errol said, "It ain't that we want to win the war. As soon as they make Lord Anthony Eden Prime Minister, the war gonna end quick, quick." Edward said, "Shut up, kid." But the biggest change of all was the way Edward began talking of women. Up till then, he used to say that he was finished with them for good. He made out that his heart had been broken a long time ago, and he had made a vow. It was a vague and tragic story. But now, on Sundays, Edward said, "You should see the sort of craft they have at the base. Nothing like these stupid Trinidad girls, you know? No, partner. Girls with style. Girls with real class." I think it was Eddowes who said, "I shouldn't let it worry you. They wouldn't angle with you, those girls. They want big, big American men. You safe." Edward called Eddowes a shrimp and walked away in a huff. He began lifting weights, and in this, too, Edward was running right at the head of fashion. I don't know what happened in Trinidad about that time, but every young man became suddenly obsessed with the body beautiful idea, and there were physique competitions practically every month. Hat used to console himself by saying, "Don't worry, it's just a lot of old flash, you hear? They say they building muscle. Just let them cool off and see what happen. All that thing they call muscle turn fat, you know?" Eddowes said, "Is the funniest sight you could see. At the dairies in Phillip Street, all you see in these days is a long line of black men sitting at the counter and drinking quart bottles of white milk. All of them wearing sleeveless jersey to show off their big arm." In about 3 months, Edward made his appearance among us in a sleeveless jersey. He had become a really big man. Presently,
he began talking about the women at the base who were chasing him. He said,
I don't know what they see in me.
Somebody had the idea of organizing a local talent on parade show, and Edward said,
Don't make me laugh. What sort of talent they think Trinidad have?
The first show was broadcast, and we all listened to it in Edo's house. Edward kept on laughing all the time.
Hat said,
Why you don't try singing yourself then?
Edward said,
Sing for who? Trinidad people?
Hat said,
Do them a favor.
To everybody's surprise, Edward began singing. And the time came when Hat had to say, I just can't live in the same house with Edward. I think he'll have to move. Edward moved, but he didn't move very far. He remained on our side of Miguel Street. He said,
It's a good thing. I was getting tired of the cow smell.
Edward went up for one of the local talent shows, and in spite of everything, we all hoped that he would win a prize of some sort. The show was sponsored by a biscuit company, and I think the winner got some money. They just give the others a 31-cent pack of biscuits, Hat said. Edward got a package of biscuits. He didn't bring it home, though. He threw it away. He said,
Throw it away. Why I shouldn't throw it away?
You see, it's just what I just tell you. Trinidad people don't know good thing. They just born stupid. Down at the base, it have Americans begging me to sing. They know what is what. The other day, working and singing at the base, the colonel come up and tell me I had a nice voice. He was begging me to go to the States. Hat said,
Why you don't go then?
Edward said fiercely,
Give me time. Wait and see if I don't go.
Edo's said, What about all those women and them who was chasing you? They catch up with you yet, or they pass you?
Edward said, Listen, Joe, I don't want to start getting tough with you. Do me a favor and shut up.
When Edward brought any American friends to his house, he pretended that he didn't know us. And it was funny to see him walking with them, holding his arms in the American way, hanging loosely like a gorilla's. Hat said, All the money he making, he's spending it on rum and ginger. Curry favoring with them Americans. In a way, I suppose we were all jealous of him. Hat began saying,
It ain't hard to get a work with the Americans. I just don't want to have boss, that's all. I like being my own boss.
Edward didn't mix much with us now. One day, he came to us with a sad face and said,
Hat, it look like if I have to get married.
He spoke with his Trinidad accent. Hat looked worried. He said,
Why you have to get married? She making baby.
Is a damn funny thing to say. If everybody married because woman making baby for them, it could be a hell of a thing. What happened that you want to be different now from everybody else in Trinidad?
You come so American?
Edward hitched up his tight American-style trousers and made a face like an American film actor. He said,
You know all the answers, don't you? This girl is different. Sure, I fall in love maybe once, maybe twice before. But this kid's different.
Hat said,
She's got what it takes.
Edward said, Yes. Hat said,
Edward, you is a big man. It's clear that you make up your mind to marry this girl.
Why you come round trying to make me force you to marry her?
You was a big man. You ain't have to come to me to get permission to do this, to do that.
When Edward left, Hat said, Whenever Edward come to me with a lie, he like a little boy. He can't lie to me.
But if he married this girl, although I ain't see she, I feel he gonna live to regret it.
Edward's wife was a tall and thin white-skinned woman. She looked very pale and perpetually unwell. She moved as though every step cost her effort. Edward made a great fuss about her, and never introduced us.
The women of the street lost no time in passing judgment. Mrs. Morgan said,
"She is a born troublemaker, that woman. I feel sorry for Edward. He get himself in one mess."
Mrs. Baku said,
"She is one of these modern girls. They want their husband to work all day and come home and cook and wash and clean up. All they know is to put powder and rouge on the face and walk out swinging the backside."
And Hat said,
"But how she making baby? I can't see anything."
Edward dropped out of our circle completely.
Hat said, "She given him good help."
And one day, Hat shouted across the road to Edward, "Joe, come across here for a moment."
Edward looked very surly. He asked in Trinidadian, "What you want?"
Hat smiled and said,
"What about the baby? When it coming?"
Edward said, "What the hell you want to know for?"
Hat said, "I could be a funny sort of uncle if I wasn't interested in my nephew."
Edward said, "She ain't making no more baby."
Eddowes said,
"So it was just the line she was shooting then?"
Hat said, "Edward, you lying. You make up all that in the first place. She wasn't making no baby, and you know that. She didn't tell you she was making baby, and you know that too. If you want to marry the woman, why are you making all this thing about it?"
Edward looked very sad. "If you want to know the truth, I don't think she could make baby." And when this news filtered through to the women of the street, they all said what my mother said. She said,
"How you could see pink and pale people ever making baby?"
And although we had no evidence, and although Edward's house was still noisy with Americans, we felt that all was not well with Edward and his wife. One Friday, just as it was getting dark, Edward ran up to me and said,
"Put down that stupidness you're reading and go and get a policeman."
I said, "Policeman? But how I could go and get policeman just like that?"
Edward said,
"You could ride?"
I said, "Yes."
Edward said, "You have a bicycle lump?"
I said, "No."
Edward said, "Take the bike and ride without lump. You bound to get policeman."
I said, "And when I get this policeman, what I could tell him?"
Edward said, "She tried to kill herself again." Before I had cycled to Arapita Avenue, I had met not one, but two policemen. One of them was a sergeant. He said,
"You thinking of going fi?"
I said, "Is you I coming to find?" The other policeman laughed.
The sergeant said to him, "Me smarty. I feel the magistrate gonna like that excuse. Is a new one, and even me like it."
I said, "Come quick. Edward wife try kill herself again."
The sergeant said, "Oh, Edward wife always killing herself, eh?"
And he laughed. He added,
"And where does Edward wife try to kill herself again, eh?"
I said, "Just a little bit down Miguel Street."
The constable said, "He really smart, you know."
The sergeant said,
"Yes, we leave him here and go and find somebody who tried to kill herself. Cut out this nonsense, boy. Wear your bicycle license."
I said, "Is true what I telling you? I could come back with you and show you the house."
Edward was waiting for us. He said,
"You take a damn long time getting just two policemen."
The policeman went inside the house with Edward, and a little crowd gathered on the pavement. Mrs. Baku said,
"Is just what I expect. I know from the first it was going to end up like this."
Mrs. Morgan said,
"Life is a funny thing. I wish I was like she and couldn't make baby. And I'd have a woman now trying to kill herself because she can't make baby."
Eddowes said,
"How you know is that she want to kill herself for?"
Mrs. Morgan shook a fat shoulder.
"What else?"
From then on, I began to feel sorry for Edward, because the men in the street and the women didn't give him a chance.
and no matter how many big parties Edward gave at his house for Americans, I could see that he was affected when Edo shouted,